Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Thursday morning. Very nice to have you with us. Let me introduce our panel, and then we will get on to our discussion and invite you to join in on that discussion as well. In, on, whatever. editor, which...
I wasn't paying attention.
No, okay, that's fine. That's all right.
just call. call and write.
We don't.
You never call. You never write.
Don't call. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, sir.
Well, good morning, sir. And to all of our listeners, near and far, but I'm sitting here trying to figure out how to get the rest of the summer into the... You know, into the remaining days.
2 weeks.
I got to get down to the Great Barrington fly-in, you know, the airport in Great Barrington. And they fly all these people in, and these planes all come. I'm going to bring our little grandson, Noah, to see the planes landing on August 15th.
August 15th. So that would be Friday night.
No.
Saturday night. Saturday.
Saturday, yeah.
Saturday.
Yeah. August 15th.
Thank you, Art.
Yeah, Saturday, August 15th. That's right.
Saturday, August 15th at the fly-in.
At the fly-in.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that sounds cool.
I just wanted you to know that I'm thinking all the time about how to get everything in. Done it all.
Well, you are. You're thinking all the time.
Yeah, sure.
What kind of planes did they fly in and out of?
Old ones, yeah. Newer ones, double two engines.
So you can't visit your son in New Orleans flying directly from Great Barrington to New Orleans.
No, it's Great Barrington International Airport.
I see.
No, it isn't. Yeah. But it is.
Someday.
It is quite something.
Some years ago in High Falls, a little community in Ulster County,
sure.
They talked about building the High Falls Subway.
Oh.
Never came about.
Yeah,
well.
A lot of nude bathing goes on in High Falls.
Daily Freeman publisher emeritus Ira Fussfeld is the one giving us travel tips for High Falls, and we thank him very much for that. Political consultant Libby Post is back as well. Thank you very
much. You're welcome.
For being here and helping out on this Thursday morning. We appreciate it.
Couldn't think of a better place to be.
Yeah.
Liar!
Yeah,
that's like a little harder.
Right now... Yeah, it's okay.
Yeah, right now.
Right now, right at this very moment.
We haven't started fighting yet.
Let her know in a half hour.
Yeah.
And,
wasn't that 15 seconds? The Princess Bride, didn't they always yell out, liar?
No.
No?
I only saw it once, so I don't remember.
No, there is a line there, though. And it's escaping me now. Anyway.
Bring out your dead. That's what I remember. But that's Monty Python.
I have we have many stories to discuss, and I'm going to start with what I think is a sad story here. Well, it is a sad story, but I want to start off with it, and that is we learned yesterday that Jimmy Carter has cancer. The former president is 90 years old. He announced yesterday that he had cancer. The details are a bit sketchy, understandably so. I guess he went in for liver surgery to remove a small mass, and the release that he sent out, that his office, the Carter Center, put out, said that it is now in other parts of my body. I will be rearranging my schedule as necessary so I can undergo treatment by physicians at Emory Healthcare. And a more complete public statement will be made when facts are known, possibly next week. And obviously, the president and the first lady were very quick to wish the president a full and fast recovery. And this comes just a few weeks after he finished up a book tour in which he talked in that book about his father and many instances of cancer in his family. And so whenever you have a president... a former president who is ill, it's certainly big news, especially at 90.
Yeah. I mean, most of his family, a lot of his brother and I think two other siblings or two other pancreatic cancer. So, which go, you know, you don't know until it's too late when you have that for the most part. And so, you know, he's lasted a very long time. He's tenacious. He certainly hasn't played by the rules of the President's Club. He's doing whatever he wants to do on the national level. And, you know, for those who read Vanity Fair or who don't, he was in the Proust interview was last month's. And, you know, his love for Rosalind is so clear and so much a part of who he is. It's really lovely.
I'd be curious to hear what Alan's evaluation is of the Carter presidency, lo, these many years after he's left office, because my impression is that history is going to treat him more kindly than the initial reaction to his presidency when he left office.
All right, I think that's exactly right. Some people say that Jimmy Carter is the best ex-president we have ever had in this country because he has been unafraid. He's spoken out. He goes to places that nobody else ever thought about going. He says things that a lot of people either like or don't like, but he's been out there and he's been on the side of the downtrodden for the most part.
His name still comes up often when Republicans try to denounce Obama, and their invective is that he's the worst president since Jimmy Carter. And I sort of think that that's an unfair comparison on a number of levels. First of all, I think it underestimates how good a president Obama has been. But I also think it denigrates Carter unnecessarily.
Also, similarities as far as the state of the country and where we were in a military position, admired, and coming out of that of course, President Carter taking office in 76 President Obama taking office in 2008. So I find that fascinating. I think there are many similarities, but obviously we wish him well and hope that the story gets better. I have to say that it was last month. I thought I met him once, and I wanted to go, and he was speaking at the Philadelphia Free Library, so I just went on a road trip. I got in the car, I drove down to the library. I saw Jimmy Carter. I met him again. I got my book signed, and I left. I just felt really good about it. It was just like,
well, you've interviewed him several times.
He's been on many times.
Did you have interaction with him?
Yeah, it was very nice.
I mean, when you went to Philadelphia.
Yes.
So he remembered who you were.
Well,
that's
I don't know. The person who was whispering in his ear remembered who I was.
The Secret Service said, there's this big guy lurking around
right.
here.
Yes.
Keep an eye on him.
I don't know.
With a Hawaiian print shirt on.
But man, did he, you know, he just, the love in that room for that guy is just unbelievable. And I don't know, I mean, Alan, you know this better than anybody, of where that comes from. I mean, I don't know how much of that, I mean, it just seems immense respect. I just can't, I guess we had that for Reagan as well in his later years.
I suppose, but I'll tell you where it comes from. It comes from the same thing as 25,000 committed Democrats and others, you know, fill an auditorium or stadium to applaud Bernie Sanders. It is that segment, I think, of the thinking people in the Democratic Party, usually the middle left, who just adore these folks, and for good reason.
We are going to take a break. When we come back, we'll go on to other items in the news. We welcome your letters, roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. We'll be back right after this.
Support comes from Mannix Marketing, Glens Falls, New York. Since 1998, a web design and internet marketing firm working to help businesses get found on the internet. Mannixmarketing.com. The Georgian Lakeside Resort, featuring 157 rooms in the heart of Lake George Village. Vacations, weddings, meetings, and dining at Giovanna's on the Lake. GeorgianResort.com. And the Williamstown Theater Festival, Williamstown, Massachusetts. Presenting An Intervention by Mike Bartlett, directed by Lila Neugebauer, with two rotating casts on the NECO stage through August 23rd. WTFestival.org.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. And so we got a lot of letters, none of them having to do with the subject that we talked about, all of them having to do with the Princess Bride. And the word was...
Inconceivable.
Right. Wallace Shawn in...
Inconceivable.
Yes. With...
with Robin Wright and...
Carrie
Ewells and...
Elvis,
however you say his name, and the giant.
Andre the Giant
and Mandy Patinkin.
Oh, Mandy Patinkin was great
He
in
was
that.
Great in
and,
that.
And directed by Rob Reiner.
Right.
Wasn't Billy Crystal in that?
Billy Crystal
played
was
the old man.
He played a cameo.
Yeah.
The old Jewish man in medieval times.
It all started because I had said liar. Remember that? I remember vaguely our old friend Lydia Colbita citing a movie in which somebody yelled liar all the time, but I don't remember what. I thought it was. I thought
get Lydia
it was
on the phone.
Yeah,
right, let's call her up.
She's probably at the
find
track.
It. Yeah, she is at the track. All right, let's move on to other topics here of what we have. We do have a couple letters on Jimmy Carter.
We do.
If you want to read those,
they're just coming in now as we speak.
Late returns.
Michael says Jimmy Carter was too good a soul to be president. Could be. He's not dead, by the way.
Right.
There are some interesting parallels, says Jay, between Jimmy Carter and Bernie Sanders, briefly mentioned. Both men have great passion for social justice, both inspire loyalty, and both don't have much of a sense of humor, especially about themselves. Boy, are you right about that. I've been going around saying, when Bernie Sanders tells the first joke, will somebody wake me up? I love the guy, but he does.
I heard some criticism of Bernie Sanders. I think we actually talked the other day about when the folks from the, I think it's called Black Matters, interrupted
Black
him.
Black Lives Matter.
He canceled the speech because they had taken over his microphone at some event in Seattle or someplace like that. And the criticism was, doesn't this show this guy is too weak? I mean, why did he not say, this is my event, this is my microphone, get out of the way?
It's not that. He should have taken up that mantle. He doesn't seem to quite get what's going on there. And he didn't take up the mantle. What his campaign did was then hire an African-American woman to be a PR person. Mm-hmm. And so I think that, you know, he's your quintessential white lefty liberal who really has not delved into race issues enough to really understand what's going on.
Let me fight with you about that.
Okay, fine. Are you taking your gloves
off? Oh, this is my favorite part.
Let me fight with you about that. If you take a look...
Are we going to do hand wrestling?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, maybe not.
Okay.
If you
afraid of losing, are you?
Yeah, I am.
Okay, fine.
I certainly am.
Thank you for admitting that.
I'm getting out of the way.
But
yes, dear.
But if you take a look at the way in which what Bernie's talking about, it seems to me that the people in the minority community are the ones who would absolutely benefit as much as anyone in all of this. It's just that Bernie hasn't been effective in making that clear to them.
And he's talking up here.
Yeah.
He's talking way up here. He's talking New York Times level. And he's not talking Daily News level, which is what you need, how you need to talk in order to reach some of these folks.
And that's why people pay you the big bucks for this kind of consultation, Libby.
That's right. I can write at a second grade reading level, and I always venture a guess at what the Post is written at. So, anybody know? Kindergarten?
I don't have any more. Okay, we have one from Dan. The verbose criticism of President Carter is a Republican attempt to deflect attention away from former President Nixon, who brought our country to the edge of constitutional catastrophe. Pay no attention to it, he said. Okay.
So just going back to the Bernie Sanders thing for a moment, and yet we're seeing polls where he's polling extremely high in New Hampshire.
He's winning.
And winning, right. So what does that tell us?
Well, New Hampshire is apparently a state unlike any others politically. It is his neighborhood. It is his backyard. And I think that Hillary
lost there the last time, right?
Yeah, and I think if Hillary is not exactly shooting herself in the foot, because we don't know yet all the specifics of some of the allegations against her, she certainly has a lot of smoke around her, and it's obscuring her ability to draw some favorable numbers.
Okay, so we have a couple more. We have one from David Kay. I lost interest in Jimmy Carter when he spewed lies about Israel. Carter became a cause de celeb for terrorism.
I was going to mention that was a major story some months ago, years ago.
He wrote a book, and
well,
that
the thing
an
about
issue.
Carter is, as I said before, he didn't play by the rules of the President's Club. Usually, when the ex-presidents are quiet, they don't speak out on foreign policy issues. They respect the office, and that's not the case.
Well, I think
It's not the case in this. He got in the middle of the Israel-Palestinian thing.
Right.
You know,
but I don't know that was disrespecting the office.
Well, you know, there's a book called The President's Club, and they really make the case in this book that part of being quiet after you leave office is a respect for the person presently in the office and recognizing, unlike Congress, you don't get involved with foreign affairs.
Well, we have a couple of things. We heard from Carly, who says, Alan is right. The woman who plays Billy Crystal's wife yells liar repeatedly. Always a fabulous movie. Thanks for the laugh.
Liar. There we go. Okay.
And Ken says,
Alan is right, liar.
Pants on fire.
Ken says, Jimmy's been wearing a tool belt for Habitat for Humanity for 30 years and legalized home brewing in 1978, which jump-started the craft beer movement in the U.S.
Well, I didn't even know that. That was just another reason to love him.
Did you see Joe's eyes light up?
Wow, good for him.
And Grace says, Carter did more than all presidents combined to make us energy independent and lower the cost of gas by creating the CAFE standards against heavy opposition. And then we heard from Tom, who says, I've always loved your show. Jimmy Carter has always had my deep respect. He does what we all should be doing, looking out for those who are less fortunate than we. This is an element missing from most political discussion regarding many issues. We have a humble, strong, wonderful man to emulate in Jimmy Carter. All right. Yes, and then another.
And then we only have about 10 seconds.
Okay, then I'm done, except to say that Joanne checked in on Liar Liar.
Okay. You can check in as well. RoundtableWAMC.org. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. We welcome your letters, roundtable@WAMC.org, roundtable@WAMC.org. We got a few, and we'll go to those, and then we'll move on to other topics. Alan.
Right. We heard from Marjorie. Good morning. I have a question for Alan. I've been desperately trying to figure this out. Please forgive my ignorance. You're not ignorant. Does the United States Senate have the power and or authority to stop the deal with Iran? If the Senate will not support this deal, what will be the implications? It's not a treaty, so it's not a Senate only. It's both the House and the Senate. That much we know. We know that the Congress wanted this deal brought to Congress, and so the president did that. Now the Congress is going to vote on the Iranian deal. If, in fact, the president, it passes, which it's expected to do since you have Republican majorities in both houses, and the president vetoes it, and then they override his veto. The question is, is there anything that he can do? And the answer is, we don't really know. It is not a treaty. He could probably tick off an awful lot of people by doing something and signing it anyway. But I'll be honest with you, I don't know the answer to your question. Does anybody else?
Only I'd add that it seems to me if he could continue with the deal, even if his override is, even if they vote to
override,
override is override, he would have already indicated that he can do this. And this is going to happen anyway, so you may as well vote for it and let the world know that you're behind this deal. So I haven't heard him say that, which leads me to believe that that they have agreed that if there is an override and he can't overcome it,
I did find this in Politico, where California Representative Brad Sherman warns that even if Congress were to override President Obama's veto of the Iran deal, the president could still get the deal he wants. Sherman, a Democrat who serves on the House Foreign Affairs Committee, grilled Secretary of State John Kerry over whether the administration would follow the law if Congress votes against the administration's deal with Iran and overrides the president's veto. So you're not committed to following the law if you think it's a bad law? Sherman asked. Kerry said, no, I said I'm not going to deal with a hypothetical, that's all. Sherman later told reporters Wednesday that there were different opinions on the table that Obama could seriously consider if the Congress overrode his veto. So it sounds like maybe that's still to be worked out, but yes, they could still go their own way, right?
Right. I think so.
Yeah.
I also think that they would be hell to pay. So we don't know, and I'm sure he's hoping that that doesn't happen. Ken writes to us, those activists that jumped the downtown Seattle Medicare and Social Security rally were not with at BLM. They were anarchists belonging to OA206. I have no idea what this is. Ex-Palin supporters, whack job, militant religious teabaggers, and so there's that. Denounced, by the way, by Indy at BLM groups all over the
U.S.
I'm
not sure that's accurate. I saw an interview on one of the cable networks with a woman who was involved with that Black Lives Matter protest, and she was not a member of the Tea Party by any means.
Yeah, and just spell it all out. Don't give me this BLM
stuff.
Yeah,
right, the acronyms.
I don't like it, and I don't want it. Okay, so then we heard from J.C., when it comes to discussion about the Black Lives Matter protest at the Bernie Sanders event, one should consider why he would even be the focus of racial criticism as a minority and member of the black community. I feel there are a number of presidential candidates, especially on the right, who strongly deserve criticism from the BLM movement. What about Rand Paul? He's been on record supporting the logic of Jim Crow. That outburst of the event was nothing more than a grab for 15 seconds of fame. Bernie's no racist and well aware of the racial realities in the U.S. Have a good morning. And then we did that one, and let's see. Then Bernie says, I can only report what I have Richard says, I can only report what I have observed by one African-American friends and colleagues who are supporting Bernie Sanders, just as non-African-Americans are too. I really think the Democratic Party needs Sanders. Post Bill Clinton, the Democratic Party has moved too far to the right and fails to be a check and balance on the insanity of the neoconservatives. That's from Richard. I have to say, I think that maybe why Bernie gets 25,000 people, you know, going to a rally for exactly that reason. Anybody else on this? No.
No.
Okay. Okay. And Bobby C says, wasn't it revealed after Ronald Reagan became president that President Carter was undermined by Reagan's election committee in the negotiations with Iran? I recall that Reagan supporters were secretly negotiating with Iranian authorities to prevent Carter from resolving the crisis. And we certainly heard about that. We don't know. I'm not in a position to say it was true. I think that's pretty well it.
We welcome your letters. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Let's move on to other topics this morning. And we go to how about the state exam? So mm-hmm. we learned yesterday from the New York State Education Department that a large number of students opted out of the New York State exams, which was a movement. Certainly, movement to I don't want to say well orchestrated, but it was an orchestrated movement to there were ads and there were billboards and so forth to have people opt out of the new testing, basically to raise doubt about the validity of the results and make that difficult to evaluate teachers or schools. So about 220,000 or 20% of those parents opted out of the test. The State Education Department for the first time Wednesday released details about the number of students who refused to take English and math state tests in April. The refusal rate rose from 5% in 2014 to over 20% this year, state officials said, and all 1.1 million students in the state were expected to take the grade 3-8 state tests.
Were there ramifications for those who didn't take the test?
I don't think
so.
There was. You could opt out. You could opt out. So I don't think.
I don't think they have anything to do with their grades.
It doesn't go on your permanent record.
Right.
No.
But here's the thing. When I was in the fifth grade and I wasn't very good in math, somebody came up to me and said, hey, would you like not to take the math test?
You better believe it.
I would have put my hand up so fast it would have looked like a meteor. So there's Joe's right. Well, look, the unions don't like it. I appreciate that. There are many people, including my wonderful education professor wife, who think that we overtest and that we teach to the test and these are bad things. And I think that some of it was part of the movement. But I also think that some people just didn't want to take the test.
But the parents have to.
Yeah, the parents have
to. Well, the kid goes have to approve it.
Well, the kid goes to the parents and says, hey, Mom.
Well, yes. I guess in this day and age.
That wouldn't have worked in my house.
It wouldn't have happened in my house. I went home and said, I don't like my teacher. My parents are tough. Well, go back to school.
And a lot of teachers are parents. And so those, to the extent that they were part of the union movement,
The teachers weren't very happy about the test either, obviously.
Right, and they didn't want. So they would have encouraged people not to take the test.
Right.
Well, I you know, as Alan sometimes says, I'm going to get in trouble for what I say. I just am infuriated by this. It's not to say that I don't necessarily think there is room for improvement, or I don't think that there may be too much testing and all the rest. But the current system is set up, and to have people just turn their backs on these tests is just something that I just can't get my arms around. To the extent that these test results are supposed to be something that can help measure student achievement, you can't be as effective in measuring those results if 20% of the students are not taking the test. So I just believe the unions are doing a disservice here, the teachers union, and they may have legitimate gripes and they're concerned about how their teachers are evaluated, but I'm not at all in favor of urging people not to take tests.
We heard from Adam, who said, you owe an apology to the many, many thousands of Americans who support the Black Lives Matter movement for the comments made on your show that there needs to be messaging on the level of a second-grade reader in order for folks to understand what a candidate is saying. This is profoundly belittling, racist, and ignorant statement that does not represent the quality of journalism that you aspire to on your show.
That's not what she said.
No, I know it wasn't what she said, and I resent the tone of the letter, but I can say that it is incumbent on all politicians to make their language understandable to every American, white or black or brown or whatever else.
It is the KISS principle. Jim Carville said it to Bill Clinton in the movie The War Room. Keep it simple, stupid. Now, he's probably the last person who called Bill Clinton stupid other than Hillary, but you have to keep it simple. This is not about talking above, talking below. If you want your message
to resonate. And not just on this issue, any issue.
If you want your message to resonate, you have to keep it simple so people can wrap their heads around it, and you have to have it with an emotional hook.
Thank you, Libby. If anybody understands that, you do. I appreciate it. What are we doing now?
I thought you were going to read more. But
Michael said, isn't Congress the one that needs to lift the sanctions? That's true. The sanctions are different from the deal and for going along with the deal. But Michael is correct about that.
What happens to the deal if, in fact, the U.S. doesn't participate? Let's not forget there are a handful of other countries in Europe who are on board with this deal.
They're going to make out like bandits. Mm-hmm. That's what's going to happen. They're going to make their deals. They're going to make their trades. We're going to be left standing out there. And believe me, they all signed on to this, and they're going to say, well, that's just tough noogies. We're going ahead with the same thing with Cuba when this became an issue. So anyway, I believe that's it.
Okay. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back and talk more and have other topics. And as we wind up on this Thursday edition, we welcome your letters, roundtable@wamc.org. We'll be back after this quick break.
Support comes from Union Institute and Universities, offering an online master's in organizational leadership. MyUnion.edu for fall 2015 applications. Dorer Jewelers, Rhinebeck, a family jewelry business since 1827, locally owned, both fine and fashion jewelry from designers such as Allison Kaufman. DorerJewelers.com. And the Sembrick, Bolton Landing, New York, presenting an evening of theater and song with the Adirondack Shakespeare Company and the Brooklyn Art Song Society, Saturday at 7:30 p.m. Sembrick.org. Thank you.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Ira Fussfeld, and Libby Post make up the group. I'm Joe Donahue, and we welcome you to write to us, roundtable@wamc.org.
And so far, Joe, maybe the best letter of the day comes from Wes from Schenectady, who says, as a retired teacher, it was great to hear mention of something that was once more feared than the Soviet Union. Quote, your permanent record.
Yes,
it's going on your permanent record.
You'll never get into college.
Never good. All right, let's move on. Let's see. We can talk about. I'm going to let you guys pick here. China economy, President Obama's letter to the New York Times, or John Kasich.
John Kasich.
Okay. Because I heard from you first, Libby. We'll go to that story. The question, this is from a New York Times article, and John Kasich, the governor of Ohio, said that he said that conservatives need to redefine themselves as more caring. He was speaking in Derry, New Hampshire, yesterday. And the question, this came out of a question, saying, Governor Kasich, how do you feel about amnesty for the illegals, asked a voter near the back of the VFW. Mr. Kasich, the Ohio Republican, started off sounding like a border hawk, saying he wanted to finish the wall along the border with Mexico. But when he answered the question at hand, he sounded a far more pragmatic note. If they've been law-abiding, then I think they should stay, he said, referring to immigrants in this country illegally. Mr. Kasich then seemed to say that the mass deportation of immigrants was not a viable option. It is not practical, nor, I think, desirable, he began to say when the questioner interjected. And this question played out for a little while, then when asked for, you know, some clarification after the event by reporters, he said that he is looking to appeal to Republicans, asked how he could appeal to Republicans who like him but are uneasy about his support for a pathway to legal status for illegal immigrants and support for Common Core education and expansion of Medicaid. He defended himself on each issue and then uncorked an impassioned argument about his party's need to redefine conservatism and also to have the Republican Party and conservatives deemed more caring.
Or to put it another way, folks, you can either stand on principle or false principles in my mind, but you can stand on principle and lose the election, or you can win the election. If you're going to win the election, you have to attract voters, and this is one way to do it. You have to have a heart. We see it when we see the Megyn Kelly affair with Trump and, you know, women who are having their period or whatever the kind of insults that have been forthcoming. It's just dumb. Now here comes Kasich and says, do you want to win?
Yeah, I think Kasich is the tortoise in this race, and that when Trump implodes or the phenomena burns itself out, and if the party feels that, to your point, Alan, that they need to get elected, and the belief might be that Rubio is just a little bit too far to the right to attract swing voters, people are going to more and more turn to Kasich, who, as this article that Joe just cited, speaks to the base, but it also has some appeal to those who may not want to go with a Hillary or a Bernie Sanders.
Well, first of all, this all brings back the compassionate conservative and 1,000 points of light. You know, we can thank George Herbert Walker Bush for saying government doesn't need to take care of people anymore. Let's bring the faith-based initiatives. Let's go to the churches. Perhaps let's go to synagogues and mosques, but I think it was more about the churches. And they'll take care of the people so the government doesn't have to do it. And then I think his son and Karl Rove came up with the concept of the compassionate conservative. And he's trying to go back to that, but the cow's out of the barn or the horse is out of the barn. It's very clear where the Republicans stand on caring for people and taking care of people who have less. They don't care.
You know, Libby, I'm not sure you're right. I think what happens here is you got a whole bunch of people in the middle in America. That's how elections are won or lost.
I agree with you.
And we do know that if you give people a chance to feel better about themselves. And that, I think, is what Kasich is trying to do here. If you give them a chance to feel better about them, or Bush when he says compassionate conservative, or the Papa when he says 1,000 points of life, it's to make sure that even though your principles are pretty bad on this stuff, that you're giving a chance to Americans to say, I can vote for this guy.
You're sending that really simple message that we talked about before. But then why didn't Jim Huntsman get any traction 4 years ago? Because he was basically the same kind of rhetoric.
Yeah, well, it's 4 years later, among other things.
That's right. I think that Huntsman ran it really when the Fox News wing of the party was really raging, and I don't believe that it had any appeal for a guy like Huntsman, although the Republicans ultimately nominated Romney, much to their chagrin, no doubt.
Yeah.
I think Kasich is very smart. He was late getting into the race. He's taking his time. And let's not forget, if in fact he does get on the ticket at the end of the day, he is the governor of a state that that must be won, and he's very popular in that state.
I mean, Kasich-Rubio would be a deadly combination.
Or, you see, the more so, people are thinking that Kasich would be the VP nominee.
Under who?
That remains to be seen.
Rubio Kasich?
Yes.
Walker Kasich?
Jeb Bush?
Bill Maher says it's going to be Rubio Fiorina. Get the Latin
please.
Vote and the women's vote.
Oh, yeah, please. She's not going to get the women's vote.
All right. We have a lot of letters
we
on
do.
Testing.
Oh, we do. Okay, testing. I'm not sure you realize
how long,
difficult, and unrealistic the new state tests are. The CC standards are not Common Core, are just not more difficult, but also experimental. Teachers don't agree with the way they were forced to teach, and they don't think the tests are fair. Teachers who are parents are, by and large, opting their children out because the tests are so unpleasant. And Stephen says, long-shot presidential nominee, likely Veep nominee, GOP needs Ohio, and Steve, and that's what I basically said, that he would be the VP guy.
Yeah, and to that first letter, I don't necessarily disagree with that point, that the test, all of the negative things that people are saying about the testing, what I don't like is that the teachers union, among others, is urging people not to take these tests. I think that they should be all sitting down at a table. The teachers deserve to have a place at that table, and if they want to, and if they're able to come up with a better idea, that's great. But let's let the current system play itself out.
Cassandra says, I'm a Democrat, but as I get older, I become a little bit more conservative, or maybe just less liberal. I like John Kasich, and I like what he had to say. He was able to appeal to me as a young Democrat. This is exactly the point I was making
absolutely.
A few seconds before. If it is not possible for a Democrat to get elected, a moderate Republican such as Kasich would be better than ultra-conservatives such as Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker or Florida Senator Marco Rubio. Walker and Rubio scare me. I would prefer Hillary Clinton, but if that's not possible, I think Kasich would do well, and that's exactly my point. Sarah says, dear panel, bad call providing opinions with little supporting evidence regarding state testing. Corporation-based tests created with no teacher input are being used by our governor to break the unions. These tests have very little to do with teaching, learning, or properly assessing students. And then Colleen says, Libby, you are wrong. How dare you say I do not care for others because I'm a Republican conservative? It is liberals like you that make me a conservative.
Okie dokie.
John says, Alan is right, but not always. I don't think elections are won by the middle ground anymore. I think elections are won by turnout. I think, John, there's probably room for both of us here. In other words, it is turnout, but it is also that there's a whole group of Americans who could go either way. As an eighth grade teacher, my opinion about standardized testing is it makes it necessary to teach the content through a particular lens. The lens focuses on one way of understanding the content. Free exploration of content that allows for deep learning is difficult to work with into the limited time we have. This begs the question, why do we give standardized tests? My opinionated response, follow the money. And Larry says, he said, I forgot to sign my name, all right. And Ethan says, whew. Dear Roundtable, I don't think you understand what's going on with the testing. These tests are not necessarily testing what is being taught to the students. Honor students are not performing as well on the test because, for example, the geometry regions contains non-geometry questions. The curve is such that the students that score at the top are being downgraded for their stellar performance, and then a lot more, and it's too long to read. And we're not doing that one because it's a reference to something else. Okay, Ellen says, remember the teachers were not consulted in the implementation of the CC standard or the test. Okay, and Larry says, state testing is so much more complicated than the state's line that they want children on track to be college and career ready. The current New York executive administration, no supporter of public education, and a lot more, and I'm not going to read it. And Care says, the woebegone teachers all above average are the last ones we should listen to about testing. There may be too much testing, and tests are certainly not perfect, but they're our current best means for evaluation. If we don't measure, how can we improve? How can we know what teachers are having a positive impact? How can we know which districts are improving or which are worsening? 20% of parents don't care enough, obviously don't care enough about education to try to find these important answers. And Roger says, without mandatory testing, how do parents know if their children are progressing intellectually? And then I guess Barbara says, the main issue is that 38% of students met the math requirements and 30% met reading requirements. This means the majority of students did not learn what they needed at their grade level. Pardon me. Put the time and effort into investing in small classrooms and support services. That's something more money. Think of what would happen. Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, just take a few seconds when you're typing out your messages to make sure that the words are what you meant.
You have verbs and stuff.
Right. To say.
That they're complete. Okay. Or sort of.
We are out of time.
Oh, boy.
So we will end it there. But I thank everyone who wrote in, and we thank you very much. Roundtable at WAMC.org if you'd still like us to read what you have to say. Alan, Ira, Libby, thank you very much.
Pleasure.
For being here.
Show ought to be 2 hours.
do you think we can keep up this enthusiasm?
Well, no, but the media project, we always said it ought to be an hour. So we'll say the panel ought to be 2 hours.
There you go. All right. We will be back. More show after this.